Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy to get 20% off your first month of cognitive behavioural therapy, with weekly sessions online with a therapist, in addition to worksheets, a journal, meditation and yoga videos, and unlimited messaging. There's strong evidence that CBT can help people who hoard, and accessing therapy online can be affordable and accessible. Find out more and get your discount at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/spoken today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. Hey, how are you? I'm all right. I am talking today about when you feel like giving up. But before that, I'm going to share my success of the week and my weird dilemma of the week. And at the end, there will be a shout out to another podcast with a little clip that will make your tip of the week. So my success of the week is a bit of a different one. And I'm already starting to question it, to be honest, but I wrote it in the spreadsheet and it was a success. So I didn't do any work on the podcast all weekend. Nothing on Saturday, nothing on Sunday. And that felt like a big deal because I work full time. Well, I've got two jobs. I do two jobs that add up to full time hours. And then the podcast takes, I don't know, I'd say at least, I do know because I track my hours, but it's somewhere between one and two kind of more working days in the week, which, as you can tell, adds up to a lot of time. And I do not resent that. I don't begrudge it. I'm not complaining at all. However, it does mean that winding down and switching off is not something I'm great at. And so the weekend is when I've got like two whole days when I'm not at work, either of my works, and is kind of ideal podcast time. So I get quite a bit of stuff done. But by last Friday, I was just so wiped out and I thought I'm going to do nothing related to the podcast on Saturday, all day Saturday. I'm going to do nothing podcast related. And then on Sunday, I thought, you know what? I'm going to do that again. And so all day Saturday and all day Sunday, I did nothing podcast related. And that is my success of the week. And it is a success. My slight hesitation is that, of course, it means that I've been left with a lot of things to do during the week, to do after work. So that's where my slight hesitation comes in, because it's that thing where it still has to be done. And as I said, I'm absolutely not complaining about this. It's what I signed up for, and it's a useful thing for everybody. But yeah, there just aren't enough hours in the day. But it remains a success that I didn't do anything over the weekend, even if it means it's all been a bit of a squeeze this week. So same amount of hours have gone into it, but just squashed into a few evenings. So that is my success of the week. And it is a success, even if it's made the week a bit more stressful. My weird dilemma of the week is Tupperware related. I talked a few episodes ago about matching Tupperware lids with bottoms and stopping, bases is probably a better way to put it, and stopping just throwing them all into a pile and assuming one will match another. I made it a mission to match up lids with bases so that I knew exactly what I had and exactly what I had that matched. And the result of that was, as with many like-with-like projects, that I realised I had more Tupperware than a soup kitchen could use, never mind a single woman. And I decided I had to get rid of at least some of it. And I've been trying to work out how to do that, and I've worked out various things. And sometimes when I'm falling asleep is when I have my best ideas. I'm just about to fall asleep and I have an idea for the best podcast episode. Or I'm just about to fall asleep and I have an idea for somebody I could contact about something, or anything really. And I always think I don't want to wake myself up at that point. Sleep is precarious at the best of times. So I don't want to wake myself up. But I think this is such a good idea, I can't possibly forget it. And then, of course, by morning, I've no idea what it was. So my weird dilemma. And I often, the worst thing is, I often remember that I had a good idea. I just can't remember what it was. And so my weird dilemma of the week is that at some point last week, while falling asleep, I thought, oh, you better keep one of that particular size of Tupperware, because, and I had this genius idea of what to do with it. And ever since, I've been able to remember that I had a genius idea, but I have no idea what it was. And based on some of my other falling asleep ideas that I have somehow captured, they're not always as genius as I think they are. So my weird dilemma is, do I keep a Tupperware box of that size just in case the idea comes back to me? I'm continuing to try and get rid of the other ones I've still got, so there's no rush to get rid of the last one of that particular size, but we will see. So that was my weird half-asleep dilemma of the week. So on Facebook, I shared an episode from a while ago where Jan and I spoke to parents who hoard, and there was somebody who commented on that post and said, I so needed to hear that. I just feel like giving up. And we all know exactly what that person felt like, because we have all been there. And I just thought those two sentences deserved an entire episode, because de-hoarding is hard, living with hoarding is hard, and giving up can feel like it's the easier path. It is exhausting trying to tackle it. It is emotionally taxing. It's physically taxing. And it is not at all surprising that all of us at various points hit that doubt that we can't do it, or hit that doubt that we want to do it. So for anybody who feels like giving up, this episode is for you. So whenever a project is in any way long term, there are valleys and there are hills and there are steep uphill bits and there are easy walks on the flat and there are alarming slides at speed downwards. It's really a marathon. I've never run a marathon. I've never had any desire to run a marathon. I can't think of much worse than running a marathon. But I would imagine if I had, there would be like, at 4 miles in, you might think, this is brilliant. I've got this. This is amazing. And then at 11 miles in, you might go, oh, I'm quite tired and I'm not even halfway there yet. This is quite hard. And then at 15, you get another like buzz. And then at 19 miles in, you start to question all your life choices and wonder what on earth you're doing. And it's a whole up and down and up and down, not just in the physicality of my knees really hurt or my shoes are rubbing or I can't breathe, but also the mindset that will get you from start to finish. And a massive project like dehoarding a home is exactly the same. There are times when you feel like, I've got this. I am flying. I know what I'm doing. I've got the hang of this. And it feels quite easy. And you feel like, yeah, nailed it. Nailed it. And then there are other times when you're like, I don't know how to do this. There are times of I am sick of this. There are times of I want to, but I just don't know how. And it all adds up to a mixed bag of successes and triumphs and then dips of doubt. So when you're doing something long term like dehoarding, setting realistic expectations for yourself is pretty crucial. If you think you're going to complete dehoarding your home in a weekend from start to finish, then you're probably not going to be able to. And that's probably going to make you feel disheartened and disappointed and like giving up hope. Whereas if you can be realistic in your expectations or at least flexible in your expectations, that can help you not get disheartened. I'm terrible at knowing how long things are going to take. It's a skill I don't have in life as well, you know, not just with dehoarding, but especially with dehoarding. I look at a room or I look at a pile and I have no idea how much work it is, whether that's a quick job or a big job. I just don't know. So for me, I've learned that setting expectations around time doesn't work that well for me because I nearly always get it wrong. My brain doesn't work that way. And my piles or maybe just a bit too random to work that way. If you don't know quite what you're going to encounter, it's hard to know how easy or difficult it will be to deal with. So for me, when I set expectations, I try not to do it around timings and to do it instead around other things, like the order I might do things. So I might plan, when I've done this bit, I will do that bit, rather than I will do this bit today and that bit tomorrow. If you are better at working out timings than me, learn from doing. If you find that you're repeatedly running out of time compared to what you planned, don't keep setting the same time expectations on yourself when you're clearly underestimating how long it will take. Try and be as realistic as you can when you are creating expectations for yourself and maybe for other people. Because if you're telling other people those expectations, you might have the additional burden of feeling like you're letting them down as well. And that relates a bit to my next point, which is to be flexible. Things just don't always go according to plan. Whether that is that you get a cold and you've just not got the energy, or whether that is that despite it being September, you suddenly get a heat wave in England and your house is unbearably hot and you can't do anything. Or it might be that you find that kitchen things are harder to sort than you'd imagined. Any of these things, you might break your leg. If you build flexibility in, that helps you to feel less like you're letting yourself down. So when you're setting those expectations as well, building flexibility into that means, in most cases, don't, when you're just starting out, write a detailed plan for the next 3 months. Because if on day two you realize you vastly underestimated or vastly overestimated how long things take, or how emotionally taxing it is, or how much energy you've got, you need some wiggle room in your plan. I find, I'm going to get onto kind of goal setting later, but I find that I'm responding much better to short and medium term goals than I am to long term goals. I still get overwhelmed if I think about a goal of de-hoarding my entire house, whereas de-hoarding this bit so that I can do that thing is working a lot better for me. But build flexibility in, whether you're planning or setting expectations or just hopeful. Know that it's, de-hoarding is a weird thing. Just as you think you've got the hang of something, there's a new obstacle. Or just as you learn a thing that really helps you, it stops helping you. And if from the start you say, this is what I'm planning, but there is room for this to change and that to change, then you're not setting yourself up to fail in the way that you might be if you say it is September and in mid-January I will be doing this precise thing. The listener voicemail segment has a monthly theme to help you think of something to say. For September, the question for you to answer is, what's the hardest thing for you to get rid of? For some people, it's nostalgic items. For others, it's books or food or clothes. This is your opportunity to share your hardest things with us all. Have your say with your voice. If you want to record a voice message for me to potentially play on a future podcast episode, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail and leave a message. The topic for September is the hardest thing for you to get rid of. Let us know what you're thinking at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Another thing, and it comes up again and again and again, is break it down. Break it down into smaller chunks. We need, most people need milestones of some kind so that we can celebrate the small wins. When you're doing a project as complex as dehoarding a house or a flat or an office or whatever you're dealing with, a storage unit, the whole thing is a big goal to have. And if you can set the goal of this table, the kitchen table is going to be clear by the end of the week, then by the end of the week, when your kitchen table is clear, you can have a little celebration because that was your goal and you've achieved it. And then when that's clear, you can set your next goal. Or when you're setting the kitchen table goal, that can be, I'm setting that goal so that after that I can do this. You might want to set several at once, but the more bite-sized and manageable tasks are, the more you can get little senses of accomplishment periodically, which is less daunting and also gives you a bit of a boost on a more regular basis. And when you've got that, you're less likely to get to that point of absolutely being ready to quit. The next idea that is so important is to have some compassion for yourself. Now, I mentioned that that Facebook comment that inspired this episode was on the Facebook post for the episode for hoarders who are parents. And I want to read you the comment that the Children of Hoarders group left in response. Now, for context, the Children of Hoarders group are people, it's made up of people who were damaged by having parents who hoard. And they responded with such compassion and such understanding and determination that this person didn't give up and did do the right thing. So they said, please don't give up. Even if you struggle to believe you deserve better, show your children that they do. So many of us learn the opposite, that we are not worth the effort. Even if nobody taught you to believe that you deserve it, you can break the cycle. Be their hero and learn to see yourself through their eyes. And I thought that was so beautiful because it's about having compassion for the children who live with you, but also having compassion for yourself, partly for the benefit of those children and partly for your own benefit. It's so easy to beat yourself up and hate yourself and resent everything. And I get caught up quite a lot in, well, you created this. I get very accusatory. This is your fault. You did it. And yeah, I did. I did create it. It is my fault. I did it. However, throwing that at myself as an accusation, doesn't inspire me to do my best work, you know? And if instead I can say, yeah, I created it and it's really difficult and I'm dealing with the consequences of that now, but I created it because I was really unwell. And you know what? I'm doing my best. And my best doesn't always look amazing. Sometimes it looks better than others, and sometimes it's impressive. And sometimes it's really underwhelming, but this is hard and you're doing a really hard thing and every step deserves to be celebrated and you're doing okay in a difficult situation. And just remind myself that I'm not a monster. I'm not a monster. And I don't know you, but I'm sure you're not a monster either. You're somebody who's struggling and you're somebody who's unwell and you're somebody who's dealing with an overwhelming and impossible feeling task. But if you can give yourself a break, you're just setting yourself up to hate yourself less, and hating yourself less is conducive to not wanting to give up. A tactic I use if I feel like I am sick of this, I am sick of doing this, it's relentless. Something I find really helpful is to change focus a bit. Now, I did an episode a few weeks ago that I will link to in the show notes about just the simplicity of turning my chair around and working on a different bit of a room that I'd been working on for a long time. Other ways to change your focus can be working in a different room. It could be working with different types of items. Say you've been working on clothes and you just cannot tolerate the idea of picking up another jumper and deciding what to do with it. Go work on books instead. Go work in the bathroom instead. All kinds of options. Doing something different feels, even though it's the same task, it's a change of scene and it's a bit refreshing. But even things like doing it to a different accompaniment, if you usually de-hoard with music on, then de-hoard with this podcast on. If you usually de-hoard with a podcast on, ring a friend and do it while you're talking to them on the phone. If you usually do it with the TV on, swap that for something else. And it can just refresh it a bit, as can doing it at a different time of day. Say you do an hour every day when you come in from work, and you've started dreading coming in from work because you hate that hour, you've grown to hate it. Do it before work. Do it a couple of hours when you a couple of hours into the evening. Shift something around so it feels a bit new and a bit less like you are in a Groundhog Day situation. And really, really, really important when you feel like giving up is to remember why you're doing it in the first place. What made you start considering de-hoarding? What was the motivation to start making a change? Was it that your adult children said, we're not coming round anymore when it's like this? Was it that your landlord did an inspection? Was it that you're just getting older and a bit less steady on your feet and you need there to be less stuff around? Was it just that you got to a point where you thought, I can't stand this? Whatever your motivation was, remind yourself of that and remind yourself of why that was so important to you. Because to try and make a change, to try and start de-hoarding, is a really big thing. And so it must have been really important to you to start trying. So remind yourself of what that motivation was. But also, do some self-examination about whether there are any new additional things that are motivating you or that could motivate you if you focused on them. Maybe you're really enjoying having a bit of extra space. Maybe you've been selling things on eBay and you're enjoying being able to treat yourself to the posh food in the supermarket rather than the basic food in the supermarket. Maybe you are in Zoom calls all day every day through work because you work from home and you like being able to position your laptop in different parts of the room. Whatever is continuing to motivate you, remind yourself of that. Maybe write it all down. And related to your motivation is your goals. What are you hoping to achieve? What do you want to happen at the end? And that's not just about your physical surroundings. It's about what it will mean for you. So you might think, I want a tidy home, sure. But go further than that and ask why you want a tidy home. Do you want a tidy home so you can invite friends over? Okay, that's a good goal. Do you want a tidy home so that you can get things repaired that have been abandoned for years? Great, that's another goal. And as I said earlier, I find it helpful to have a mixture of short-term, medium-term, and long-term goals because the usefulness of each of those is different for me. And when you feel like giving up, seek some support. If you have people who know your situation, have a chat with them about it. They must appreciate that it's a difficult thing you're trying to do. And I would hope they would offer you some moral support or even some practical support if that's something you want. But if you can't talk to, say, your friends and family, maybe some professional support, seeing a therapist, maybe you feel like you get support by listening to this, in which case, I love that. It's why I do it. But getting those new perspectives, as well as that bit of encouragement from other people, can really work wonders. And something I really try to keep in mind for myself is reminding myself, and I do have to remind myself, that I'm doing this in order to improve my life. I'm doing it so that my life is better than it currently is. I'm not doing it resentfully, although I'm not saying that doesn't hit. But the overall reasoning, this is not a punishment. This is not like I'm 12 and being told to tidy my bedroom. This is something I'm doing for the best reasons. And when you can see it as something that can really improve your life rather than just a chore, it lightens the process somewhat. And in more practical terms, a very important thing to prevent completely burning out and losing the will to do it is to take breaks. If you have been doing, 8 hours a day for a month, of course you want to give up. Of course you do. And whether it's taking a break of making sure that every hour you take 10 or 15 minutes, or whether it's making sure that you've got a full hour break in the middle of the day, or whether it's, like I did with the podcast, giving yourself the weekend off or doing less for a few days, you're just a lot less likely to completely burn out when you're doing an extended project if you allow yourself to take and embrace breaks. Being inspired by other people can help as well if you feel like giving up. If you feel like this is pointless, then if you can find somebody who's doing it successfully or somebody who's already got what you want, look to them for inspiration, whether it's somebody on Instagram, whether it's a podcaster or a YouTuber or somebody you read about in a book. If you can be inspired by somebody, and it doesn't even have to be like home related or hoarding related. If you can find somebody who did a different type of difficult long-term project, you can still be inspired by their persistence and their motivation and how they got through it, how they got from start to finish. Whether it's related to hoarding or home organization or anything like that or not, maybe you find a book about a woman who trekked the Appalachian Mountains. I don't know. Something like that, that's a long-term, amazing achievement, but hard-going thing to do. She will have had points where she wanted to give up, this imaginary woman who I've just invented in my head. And if you read her book about hiking the trail, you'll see how she got past those and onto ultimately succeeding with her goal. And how she was flexible with herself when she was trying to achieve it, and what she learned, and how she kept motivated, and all of these things. So take inspiration, whether it's from people who are de-hoarding or not. And similar to flexibility that I mentioned earlier, adapting and learning is really important and something I've had to really learn how to do. At the start of this project, I was so rigid in how I would approach things. And if things didn't go exactly how I thought they would or how I wanted them to, I would stop entirely and not start again until I'd worked out a new perfect way to do it. And key to actually getting anything done has been learning to start and adjust and start and adjust and start and adjust. And that took a lot for me. I am not good at that. But since I've been applying it to de-hoarding, I'm applying it in all kinds of areas of my life. It's been quite liberating all over my life. And if you're sticking rigidly to things that are not quite working, or if you're quitting because the thing you thought would work didn't work, think really hard about how you could gently and carefully replace that with doing a bit and then assessing, and that assessing is like what's working well and what could be better. And if there are bits that could be better, going, okay, well, how can I make that easier? And then doing that and then assessing and making an adjustment. And start out gently and try, because I could not. And now I've kind of learnt to do that. And it's been magical, really, on my approach to life. Now, the next one is not one that I have ever found any particular success with, but I know that so many people do that I'm mentioning it anyway, and that is visualizing success. I've tried visualization stuff over the years, and I've never really, other than like, I guess maybe like guided visualizations, in like to do relaxation. But I've never massively seen success for myself with visualizing how I want things to be. But some people find it magical to kind of imagine how satisfying and rewarding something will be, and that having that visualization helps people to work through this really long-term process and get to their goal. And patience, they say, is a virtue. I do not have much patience, but my goodness, is this process teaching me patience. Everything takes longer than I think it will. I make progress so much more slowly than I ever thought I would. And I'm having to live with that, and I'm having to work with that, because the alternative to slow progress is no progress. And if they are my two options, then slow progress is 100 times better than no progress. Not that I always believe that, because of course I get frustrated, and of course I get impatient, and of course I wonder how on earth I am still doing this, and how on earth there is still so much to do. But when I can give myself a break and be patient and just say, look, Rome wasn't built in a day, this is just how it is, and you've got to work with it, then that's when I beat myself up less. And when I beat myself up less, I'm less likely to want to give up. There's something quite useful as well in quite a mindful approach, that rather than always focusing on some point in the future and how it will be, just sometimes being really in the moment and dealing with exactly what's in front of you, and not thinking bigger picture and not thinking end result, just thinking, I'm going to wash this plate, feeling it and noticing it and appreciating it and not rushing constantly for the next thing. Just be in the moment as you do it. Check in with yourself and try to notice quite kind of dispassionately what's going on rather than always engaging with it all. Can give you a bit of a mental break and a different perspective. And as long as you're doing this, and like with anything long term, you have to really look after yourself. Look after yourself physically, look after yourself mentally, emotionally. Just like the marathon runner, you need rest. You need fueling your body that has some nutrients in. You need enough water that you're not dehydrated. You need to move around a bit so that you don't strain muscles or get a bad back. You need to recognize when you're overly stressed and really need a break, even if it wasn't scheduled. Taking care of yourself in those ways is essential to keep the project going. But it's also essential to help you want to give up less. And finally, if you find that you most want to give up at a time when you feel you've failed at something, and I'm raising my own hand here, remind yourself that failure is part of it. Sometimes that looks like planning to spend a whole day de-hoarding and doing nothing. Sometimes that looks like going through a pile and keeping every single thing in it. And you might afterwards, or even at the time, feel like, I am messing this up. I am failing from start to finish. This, I am useless. And of course, you want to quit. Because who wouldn't when they're failing at something? But as well as giving yourself the compassion that I would hope you would give to someone else who was experiencing an obstacle or feeling like they were failing at something, or indeed actively failing at something. You know, somebody takes an exam and it's pass or fail and they fail. I imagine you would give that person compassion, and you yourself deserve that compassion. But as well as compassion, also failure is just normal. It's part of it. How many times does a small child fall over before they manage to walk 3 steps? I mean, we're talking hundreds of times, if not more. They stand up and they land on their bum, and then they stand up and they land on their face, and they stand up and they land on their bum. And this goes on for weeks. And nobody's going, well, that kid's never going to walk. They're such a failure. It's just part of how they get to walk. And it's strengthening their legs, and it's helping them learn how their body balances. And it's through all of that that they get to the point where they walk 3 steps. And whenever it's the exams you take at age 18 here in the UK, no, here in England and Wales, sorry, Scotland, are called your A-levels, which is for advanced levels. And I know it's more complicated than that these days, but I'm trying to simplify. There are other alternatives to A-levels, but generally speaking, you take your A-levels from 16 to 18. And when you're 18, there's this day in August where everybody across the country gets their A-level results, and your A-level results generally determine whether you're going to the university you applied to or not. So you will have applied to universities, and you know, they might say, okay, you can get in, you can come here if you get 2 A's and a B in your A-levels, or you can come here if you get 4 A's, or you can come here if you get 3 C's. And so you get your university place. And if you're like me, university was like, that was your way out. That was your way into the world and out of some difficult stuff. So it was more than just studies. It was a whole new beginning. So when you're 18 and you and all your friends want to go to university, everything rides on your A-level results. And you get your A-level results at the same time as all your friends and everybody across England and Wales. And you've either got what you need for university or you haven't. And if you haven't, there are other routes and there are things you can do and you might get into a different university and all of this. But basically, that day is either absolute joy or absolute devastation. And I got what I got. I did it. I got what I needed to go to the university I wanted to go to. It was brilliant. One of my best friends did not get what she needed to go to the university she wanted to go to. And it was the worst. And so where we were all going to go to the pub and celebrate all day, we were actually just looking after our friend who was falling apart and ringing round universities saying, these were my results, can I please come and do this course? This is a very long story. I didn't intend it to be. But anyway, the point is, A-level results day every year, you see it trends on Twitter and you've got all kinds of successful people posting on Twitter about how they didn't get the A-level results they wanted and they're still doing massively well. So it's for people like my friend who hope to get one thing and didn't and feel like their entire life plan is now scuppered. And so you'll get famous person after famous person saying, I failed my A-levels, I couldn't go to uni like I'd planned, instead I did this and then I did this, and now I'm at the top of my field. And it's quite funny because it's become a bit of a cliche now. It's like the same people every year tell their I failed my A-levels story every year. But the principle of it is really important because if you look at some really famous books and how many publishers rejected them, and you look at all kinds of successful people who got where they were, not always despite failure, but sometimes because their failure spurred them on. And it's so easy to let failure discourage us. When we fail or when we feel we're failing, that is prime I can't do this anymore territory, isn't it? That is really when it hits. The magnitude of what we're trying to do compared to what feels like no energy left, no will left. But the failures are part of the story. They are normal. They are fine. And we pick ourselves up as best we can. Sometimes that's harder than others, but we try and dust ourselves down and just take the next step, because failure in what we're trying to do does not make us failures. Failure is normal. And if your friend failed her driving test or failed her medical exams, you'd be really nice to her. You'd go round with a bottle of wine and a big cake and tell her that she was still a brilliant person and you still loved her. And you'd probably go like, what did that examiner know anyway? You know, you do what you needed to do to reassure her that she is great and that that exam measures one specific thing, and on that specific day, she didn't quite make it. But that's not a reflection on who she is as a person. And it's not a reflection on her long-term success. And it's the same with us. It's the same with us. So when you want to give up, and you will, the most important thing is that you don't, even if you really, really want to. Because remind yourself, de-hoarding is hard, but living in a hoard is also hard. if you stop trying to de-hoard, it's not like your problems melt away. You're just swapping the problem of de-hoarding for a different problem, and you're doing nothing about that problem. Slow progress, tiny progress, is still progress. You might want to give up. If you really, really, really feel like you can't do it anymore, re-listen to this episode. Give yourself a few days off. Work out why you want to do it and ease yourself back in. We'll do it. We'll get there together. If you've been wondering how you can support the podcast, there are loads of options that can really help. These include donations, but if that's not something you're able to do, you can also help by leaving a review, sharing the podcast on social media, linking to the podcast from your website, or following me on social media. There are loads of possibilities. Find out more at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support. So shout out to the Learning Leader Show with Ryan Hawke for this mini snippet of James Clear, who you know by now, speaking about planning versus flexibility as my top tip this week. Now, I thought it was important to include this tip, despite the fact that I find this hard to hear, because he is right. It's just something I find hard. Have a listen.
There's a kind of like standard narrative about mental toughness and preparation that is grit, persistence, determination in the face of challenge. I'll force my way through it. We're going to stick to this system no matter what. And then there's, I think, maybe a more resilient or more useful form of mental toughness, which is flexibility, adaptability. I can work with this given the resources that I have. I can be happy no matter who I'm around or what I'm doing. And that kind of mindset, like the ultimate form of mental toughness, the ultimate form of preparation is the ability to deal with uncertainty. Yep. Because then you're prepared for whatever comes up. Yep. And there is almost always, well, there is always more that could happen than what you can imagine could happen. Mm-hmm. And so the ability to deal with uncertainty, the trust that you'll be able to figure it out, is far more important than your ability to plan for whatever scenario you could potentially imagine.
Now, that is definitely something I need to learn. I will put a link to the Learning Leader Show in the show notes, overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. And let me know what you think. Okay, thank you for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at That Hoarder and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder. To find out more about how you can support the podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. There may be links in this podcast that earn me money. This doesn't come at any extra cost to you if you ever make a purchase through the links, and it helps to support the future of the podcast.
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune in a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny. Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People on Broadway through June 16th only.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.